At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Well, welcome everybody to another Kings of Anglia special. Hello friends from all around the world, from Ipswich to Suffolk, Ipswich in Australia, Ipswich in America, or wherever else you are, all around the world. I'm Mike Bacon, and as you can see, aka the big pork thing, where it's supposed to be, pork poncho, whatever. I'm standing in, I'm off the bench, and thankfully for a little longer than James Norwood had on Saturday, folks, but that's neither here nor there. Mark Heath, the Heath Monster. It's all got too much for him. Again, this is not the first time. And we have to bear look at it. He's from the highs of the 6-0 thrashing at Doncaster to the lows of 2-1 at Accrington. He's gone too high and he's gone too low. Last heard laying down in a bed in his house, surrounded by incense candles and mood music. Quietly just recovering from the ups and downs of being an Ipswich Town fan. The Heath Monster will be back at the end of the week, but I'm in here now for the time being. So apologies if you don't really can't put up with too much of this, but I hope you can, because we've got some great guests here. And we're not guests, they're our friends. They're my friends. They're your friends. And three guys who, despite the fuel crisis, despite subways being closed on the A1, made their way up to Accrington and back all in the same day. No, there's no night stops with these guys. They're here to chat about all things Kings of Anglia, all things Ipswich Town. What a hopeless result that was, but we hopefully we'll have more fun than just that hopeless result. I'd start first by introducing, he's called the chief football writer. Chief he is. He's a chief man among chiefs. He is Mr. Stuart Watson. Stuart, I hope you enjoyed my intro there. I've run out of things to say already, so over to you. How are you, my friend?
That was quite possibly my favourite intro ever to a Kings of Anglia podcast, and all the time we've been doing this. What are you now? The pork poncho? Is that?
I don't know what I'm called. He calls me pork something. Porker, the big porker, the pork, the ponch, something. I don't know.
I like the pork poncho. Like a big ham cape that you would wear over your head when it's raining. I'm very well, my friends. Not as well as after the 6-0 win. I had to come back for this one, but there we go. We had a nice day out, didn't we, Andy?
We always have a nice day out. I just want to hear more from you, please, Poncho. I've not got anything to add. You can take it from here, Ponchosaurus.
Well, Ponchosaurus, thank you very much, Andy. Well, of course, you haven't let me introduce you, which is a little bit disappointing, but I will now introduce you because you. Here you are, Andy the Hutch Warren. Of course, we missed him a few weeks ago when I was last on. He wasn't here, which was very disappointing, but he's here now. And Andy, how are you? Because obviously, you know, you and your top man, Mr. Watson, were reporting on the game. Are you well? Is everything okay?
I'm very well. Very, very well. Very, very, very well.
Excellent. What good news that is. Very, very well a lot of times. And finally, the third member. Well, obviously, there's four of us here today, so he's not really the third member. He's the third member plus me, so that makes four. Anyway, the fourth member here on the Kings of Anglia, it's the man who takes videos and deletes them. It's the Roscoe Ross. Ross calls Ross. Roscoe Ross. They call you Roscoe, apparently. Roscoe Ross. Ross, how are you, my friend?
I'm speechless after that intro. I don't know what else to say to add that. Hashtag more bacon is going to be trending once again.
Well, absolutely. Well, I'll kick that off, but I mean, that's for another day. Ross, I mean, obviously you did a bit of it. Let's start with you, Ross, because obviously that, you know, how are the from the highs of Doncaster, how were the town faithful? What brilliant, nearly 1,000 of them going up to Accrington, standing in that awful weather and fuel crisis and all this. I mean, what a set of fans we have here at Ipswich Town. They are so lucky. And yet, not the greatest after that Accrington 2, Ipswich 1. Ross, how was their reactions?
It's the hope that kills you, really, don't it? I think the fans were on the high. They are looking forward to going to Accrington. Open terrace, and the forecast didn't look good. It was better, though. In terms of weather-wise, we were fearing it was going to be torrential rain, tropical rain all game long, but thankfully it was a bit better than first thought. Accrington is definitely our bogey side. I know we've won a few games there and a few games against Accrington at home, but as I say, the Wham Stadium is just a stadium where you just can't get that result. And it was a miserable afternoon at Accrington. And the fans weren't happy after the game. And there was one fan, I had to delete the video because he swore a lot in it. Basically, Paul Cook, you know the rest, sort out.
You keep deleting videos, Ross, but I mean that's fine. We don't mind that. But I mean, obviously, let's go to our men. I was going to say our men with the pens, but of course you don't have pens anymore. It's all laptops, isn't it? Stewie and Andy. Stewie, a fine quote from you in today's East Anglia Daily Times. Don't matter. Bullied in League One, no longer. We thought those days were over. Go on then, Stewie. Resume of Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. Ross mentioned the sticky record at Accrington and Ipswich. They've lost three of the four games there now. And the other one last season, they won, but were desperately clinging on against 10 men when Paul Cook was just been appointed and was watching from the stands. And I thought it might be a little bit different this time going into it. I had sort of confidence that Ipswich weren't going to play the likes of Accrington and Rotherham at this level and get bullied anymore. And I know they'd gone to sort of Burton and Cheltenham earlier in the season, and there was an element of that with sort of faltering under the long throws and Burton sticking the ball on top of them time and time again. But Burgess hadn't been signed, I think, for the Burton. Well, he didn't play against Cheltenham. Then he came in sort of literally days later for the Cheltenham game. I'm trying to remember which way around they were. Edmondson wasn't fit by that point. Morsi wasn't in the team by that point. So I'm thinking by this stage, Ipswich should have been better equipped to deal with this type of match. And in the end, they weren't. It was a bit like those away games that I've just mentioned, where Accrington wanted to make it a game of chaos rather than control. And that, as is their right, they came into this in really bad form. They conceded 12 goals in their previous three games, and they wanted to make this a fight game, a second balls game, picking up the bits and pieces, just continually sticking it on top of Ipswich in the final third, never letting them settle. And the frustrating thing for me is that they'd done the hard part. They'd kind of come through that first half. They'd managed to get that one moment of quality with Salinas through ball and Bonds Johnny on the spot again, 1-0 up, and you think, okay, just calm it down now, see out 5, 10, 15 minutes of the second half, do exactly what you did at Lincoln, get a nice professional away win. And they didn't, did they, Andy? They just sort of crumbled under a bit of a barrage of long balls and pressure, and that was a bit of a worrying thing for me.
Yeah, that was the big thing for me. I think it was clear quite early in this game that it wasn't going to be a good game of football to watch. However it played out, I think there's probably an element of Accrington going that little bit more solid in an attempt to kind of stop their own troubles, which had seen them concede 12-3 going into this game. I think they were maybe even more sort of compact than we'd seen them previously. But you're right, they did the hard work. It was an ugly first half. They had one shot on target and scored it. And if you remove the half-time interval from this, that they've conceded within 10 minutes again, which is an early season problem, which has cost them a lot of points now. And from there, they never got a foothold back in the game, really. The three players playing behind Bonn of Fraser, Salina, and Wes Burns, all three of those need the ball to their feet if they're going to be effective. They never got it. And it was just huffing and puffing. And eventually it was Ipswich's house that got blown down with a goal 10 minutes from time. Very, very disappointing. Because like you say, Stu, you look at the team actually, and they've got all the tools in there to deal with that kind of game. Maybe you could have looked at it in the past and midfield was a bit more lightweight in the past, arguably, with someone like Andre Dizel in there, whose game isn't to fight and tussle away, but now it's Morsi and Evans should be a bit more fit for that. Edmondson and Burgess, you look at them, they're solid, like grown-up defenders, even though they're not they're not 35, they're in their mid-20s, but they're made for fights like that, and it just didn't happen. Even someone like Janoi Dinassian, the right back, is more of a solid defender than Kane Vincent Young's been in there. So you look at it, all the tools were there, but for whatever reason, it just didn't happen again.
That's right. And I think the thing is, Stu, I mean, I don't know, I looked at the team sheet, and when, of course, you've got Morsy and Evans together, which everyone had been sort of, people didn't quite know who was going to play alongside Morsy definitely to start with. Evans has obviously come in and done the business. And I suppose what Andy's saying is right. I mean, those two, as a midfield holding duo, look strong, or on paper are strong. That's exactly what you need in that type of game.
Yeah, it should be. And they got a little bit outnumbered in midfield, perhaps. Atkinson, as Andy said, went probably quite ultra pragmatic after the results that they'd had, understandably so. They played sort of pretty much five at the back out of possession. In front of them, they had a kind of a box four-man midfield, so two sitters, and then sort of two in front of them in support of the striker. So out of possession, they had seven men behind the ball most of the time, but when they got the ball, they got it forward early, up to Colby Bishop up front, who we know is a handful, and then they had sort of two men picking up the bits and pieces, notably Harry Pell, who was a handful. So they were difficult to break down, but then they just lumped it up on top of Ipswich quite quickly and just had numbers. And even if they didn't win the first ball cleanly, they were quickest to those second balls. And that's where Cook's talking about the sort of the desire and the hunger. And just sometimes if the game's not going your way and you're not being able to do everything the way you want to do it, just go back to basics and start getting to that ball quicker than the opposition, fighting for that ball a little bit more. And I just wonder whether Tuesday night and that 6-0 win, even on a subconscious level, just saw a little bit complacency, dare I say arrogance, creep in from Ipswich that, you know, that's it, we've clicked now, we've got all our players up to speed, we've stuck six goals past someone, we get up, we've got quality in the camp, we play. And that comes maybe a little bit from Paul Cook. It's very much, it's not about them, it's about us, and we just focus on our game and we play the same way every week and it will come good. And sometimes the opposition dictates what you have to do, and that comes on to the debate then. No one has any arguments that you pick an unchanged side, you go again after a 6-0, but do you have to realise within a game that this ain't going our way today and we need to adapt accordingly? And that seems to be the big debate coming out of this one. Could Paul Cook have done more to change that storyline as it unfolded? Because we could all see what was happening unfolding in front of our eyes. Easier said than done, changing the pattern of play. Is it on the players just to fight and battle that little bit more, or could tactically things have changed a little bit? That's the kind of the debate that comes out of this game.
Roscoe, you're obviously down, no doubt. Were you getting wet? I imagine you were getting quite wet hanging around there, because usually I see you where you've got a sort of a yellow sort of bib on or something with no hat. You're usually getting drowned. But I mean, but for you, I mean, you in fact, and many of the town fans who have travelled up there with such high hopes, it must have, you know, did you see it all going wrong as it was unfolding?
Yeah, the first half, of course, we were 1-0 up in the first half, and we thought, okay, this it wasn't great first half. You know, there wasn't many chances. As Stu said, it was a game of nothingness, really. There's nothing going on, not many chances, just balls up in the air. And, you know, with Macaulay Bon up front, he had nothing going for him. You know, I know he's got his goal, but he had nothing else there for him. But just that first half, for me, just thought, this is just going to go bad in the second half. And fans were getting frustrated. And the atmosphere, from my opinion, was very flat, because it's a very open ground, Accrington. But just the atmosphere is flat. I was thinking, do you know what? I'm not going to have any good content for game day this week. There's just no atmosphere. There's nothing going on in the game. And it all went wrong in the second half. And of course, the weather didn't help. It was a miserable day. But I think Cook maybe should have done a few changes, maybe mixed up a little bit, because we just weren't winning any balls. And their defenders, 7-foot defenders, number 12 for them, well, it was a standout player for me. He was winning everything. Fans, from the highs of winning 6-0 to then travelling to Accrington, a long trip to Accrington on a Saturday morning, and then to go home, you know, defeated, a lot of disappointing fans leaving the ground.
It was that little period between the equaliser on 50 minutes and then the Accrington winner didn't come till what, 79?
Yeah.
So there's about half an hour window there where you could tell the game was going a certain way. After they equalised, their small but very vocal pocket of fans between that goal sort of raised the noise levels a little bit more. As Ross says, the away side of things was a little bit flat, understandably so. Long journey, they're getting soaked with rain. It's a really crap game of football to watch. And it just, that second Accrington goal felt like it was coming, and it didn't feel like it was coming for 4 or 5 minutes. It felt like it was coming for a prolonged time. So there was a window to react there for Paul Cook. Saying that and knowing what the answer was is a different thing. A lot of people have just been going, well, James Norwood should have come on sooner than he was introduced after the second goal went in, straight after that. People, I think Alex Matthews said on the radio that that could have happened 10 minutes earlier. And I can see the logic between Norwood being a feisty, fighty character and being well-suited to that sort of game. And I can see that maybe thinking about it, and this is in hindsight, I might not have thought about this during the game, but maybe Ipswich needed to go like for like. And, you know, maybe Toto Nsiala is someone that they could have looked at a little bit sooner, with the ball getting chucked on top of them time and time again. You go to three at the back, or if even if you don't think Toto's ready, tuck Junoid Dinassian inside. He can play centrally quite comfortably and just change formation a little bit, possibly. And there's a, Cook has made it very, very clear that this is his formation, this is the way he plays. But I think this is a quote he's used himself in terms of styles make fights. And sometimes, you know, you've got to accept that things aren't going against you, and, you know, in boxing terms, get dirty and fight on the inside. And just, I don't know, it just it felt like an inevitability about that second goal, and eventually it did come, and that's what made it so frustrating.
That's right. I suppose just, well, Heathie's not here, because now you start mentioning fighting, Stewie. He'd have been off like a good and telling us all the ins and outs of the fight game. But I mean, Andy, people have a thing about formations, don't they? I have a little bit of a thing about formations, I must be honest. I 4-2-3-1, I don't particularly like, but that's neither here nor there. Obviously, I'm wrong because I'm not a coach. So, well, I was, but not a very good one. But people have a thing about formations, Andy. I mean, do you look at it as you're watching the game? Do you bother about formations? Do you think Ipswich have got it right?
I'm maybe going to contradict myself with what I say here. I'm not bothered about formations. I do actually quite like, in theory, I've said this so many times, the 4-2-3-1. In theory, I like it. But you have to adapt within that, and it's about matchups. It's not necessarily about formations. It's about matchups. You can have little tweaks here. Like, you can still play that same system, but maybe you look at that three behind the striker of Burns, Fraser, Salina, and you think, we're just not getting these guys the ball today. You need either one of them or someone to come on to play that little bit deeper in the midfield, which again would help the match up with the Accrington midfield. Maybe, I know we've seen Harper a bit higher up the pitch of late, but maybe Harper could have come on a bit earlier for one of those attackers and dropped a bit deeper and tried to get the ball, because that's Ipswich weren't able to use their attacking players because they didn't have the ball on the floor to use. But I do think a bit much gets made sometimes about formations, because fundamentally I think a lot of players on that pitch on Saturday didn't win their own personal battles. Some of them weren't put in the, some of them had the odds stacked against them maybe because of the matchups they were facing. But in terms of winning individual battles, I think I don't think any of the players on the pitch are beyond question in terms of that. And I think it comes down more to a mindset thing. Yeah, I would say
I'm with you, Andy. I think everyone suddenly just jumps straight to the manager after a game like this. It's like, it's Cook, and it kind of gets the players off the hook a little bit for me. I don't know if this is increasingly a modern phenomenon in football, but every phone in, every debate after a game, regardless of whether people have been to the game or not, pick apart the manager's tactics and substitutions. And sometimes it just comes down to the players. You've got 11 good players on that football pitch that should be capable of adapting and winning that football match. And did they adapt? You know, they should be intelligent players that sort of adapt the way they're playing that day. And the answer is no at this at the weekend. So it felt like typical Ipswich, didn't it? Ipswich just false dawns and backward steps just seems to be the norm for Ipswich Town over recent years. And this last week just kind of encapsulates everything that we've come to know and dislike love. About this football club. Yeah.
Love. What we love about it. This is what we love about it so much. The highs and the lows. I went to Brighton this week and there was no big dipper. I mean, because it gets a high and a low. I like going on, like, you go to Blackpool, this is the big one, isn't there? Where you can go on a roller coaster, highs and lows. Stu, I just think, I don't know what I'm talking about there for that for a second. But anyway, Stu, I will just go back to what you were saying about players taking responsibility. But often when you get these days after matches, you get managers often say, blame me, don't you? They seem to, as though the players can't handle the, don't blame them, blame them. And you get it in all levels of the game. It's, that was my decision. I'll take the blame for that. Look, that, don't blame, I blame, you know. But Cook was, after the match, Stu, he was, we watched him a little bit last season, getting a little bit rattled with his players. Was this the first time he really sort of went a bit crazy, or not crazy, it's the wrong word, but he was not very happy, was he, after the game?
Yeah, it wasn't quite. We're like a bunch of Sunday league players who've won a competition to play. But we did get, it was absolutely shocking. And we didn't know, lack of hunger, desire, etc. He's a man who wears his heart on his sleeve. He's a man who really, I think, looks at a game through fans' eyes, first and foremost. You know, he talks about whether he enjoyed watching us play. So I think he doesn't come out and talk like a manager necessarily after a game. He comes out and talks a bit like us watching it as spectators. What the players sort of make of that, I don't know. Be interesting to see what their reaction is to this one. Sam Morsi's interview with Andy afterwards was quite interesting, the way he kind of described Accrington. I'm sure that will get sort of picked up at their end and be seen to be sort of a derogatory. He was certainly very unhappy about an incident towards the end where Harry Pell, who set up a goal and scored the other, at one stage under zero pressure, just turned and thumped the ball out of the ground as hard as he could, and it landed in somebody's back garden.
Sort of like a habit moment, sort of.
It was exactly that. John Smith's habit. And
some people call that game management. See, it all depends on what the score is at the time. You see, if Town were 2-0 up and one of our players, it'd be game management. Now it's apparently it's, well, and I want to speak to you, Andy, about this in a minute. Apparently it's sort of non-league-ish, which is, well, I as a fan of non-league, I take great exception to that. But anyway,
no problem with Accrington at all. I'll let Andy take up the story on Morsi, but Accrington had to do what they need to do, and they what works for them. And Accrington, I always really enjoy the vibe around Accrington. It's a lovely sort of family community club. As soon as you pull up there, they've got a marquee and music, and Andy Holt, their chairman, sort of mingles with everybody, and there's something really wholesome about them as a football club. But I get the feeling there'll be one or two of those Ipswich fans that have probably silently vowed never to go to the Wham Stadium again after their long journey and getting wet and always losing there. But no, I've got no problem with Accrington and their approach. You have to do what works for you. But I don't know whether those quotes looked worse in black and white than perhaps they did in the person, Andy. You were the man to interview him.
No, I'm not sure they did. I feel the same about Accrington, by the way. It does feel like a nice place to be. You kind of walk in through a residential street and then down a dirt track, and all of a sudden there's like fans all milling down there. And Andy Holt, after the game, Andy Holt, I think after Paul Cook had spoken to you, Stu, Andy Holt tried to get Paul Cook to come and look at the new building site that is going on behind that stand, the main stand over on that side. And Paul did not want to go and have a look at the building work that was going on. I think he politely declined and said he'd be back in a minute and wasn't. But going back to Morsi, I think quotes always look more stark in black and white. And I'll always look at a player and think, yes, you're doing this 20 minutes after a loss, which you should be thoroughly, thoroughly disappointed by. But there was a definite anger about Sam Morsi after the game. How much of that was kind of directed inwards and how much of it was directed outwards, I think only he will know. But a very very, very disappointed captain who has probably himself come down off of a massive high. Clearly hadn't enjoyed playing in that midfield, probably wasn't happy with the way he and his teammates had performed. But going back to what you said at the start, Stu, I don't think really, and if you think about it, if he's thinking about it now, you can't blame Accrington for the way they approached this game. They won the game. There was no, they weren't going around kicking people. They weren't going around kind of barging people around, were they? They were just giving it to Ipswich Town and ultimately came away with a win.
Smacks a bit of the, do you remember the Cesc Fabregas comments about sort of Ipswich being a rugby side and everything? And that can fire you up a little bit sometimes. That just looks a little bit like sour grapes afterwards. The thing I take from it is I'm just pleased that Sam Morsy is pissed off, that there is that anger in him. And that is a good sign that Ipswich should be annoyed, really, really frustrated and angry that they've gone and lost a game like that. With the greatest respect to Accrington, and I say this with, I know when people say with the greatest respect, sometimes it doesn't mean that, but Ipswich, with the resources and the team that they've built and everything, should be every game like this that they certainly lose, should provoke that sort of reaction within, and that they now need to sort of turn that anger on themselves and use that as self-motivation to say that can't happen again next time this comes along. Paul Cook's always talking about learning from experiences. This will happen again at some point and we will need to deal with it better next time it comes around.
And I think also, Stuart, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, they went up to Manchester United, was it, and trained a couple of days before the game. And you know, it's all very, you know, getting treated very professionally, getting treated like professionals. And I completely understand. Andy's completely right. You stick a microphone under somebody's mouth 20 minutes after a game when they're absolutely wild, they're going to say things. I think the non-league reference was a little bit naughty. And I think if he'd had more time to think about it, I don't think he'd have said that. But I do agree. I think it's great. It's nice to see Morsy is peed off. That's what we want more of.
To interject. I guess what he means by non-league is in terms of the surroundings of the club. I mean, 2,600 was the crowd. I think I saw, I think it was Statman put on Twitter that's the lowest attendance Ipswich have ever played in front of for a league game in their history. So this is the context of Ipswich Town. So when Sam Morsy's saying that, he's sort of, maybe he's probably referencing the surroundings of Accrington and where they've come from, and that ultimately Ipswich Town should not be losing to Accrington Stanley, given the context of where both clubs are at. Maybe he means that more in a derogatory way to Ipswich rather than to Accrington. Do you know what I mean? And that is correct.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an element of that in what he was saying, I think. Yeah. I think so. There were things he wasn't impressed with from Accrington, but I think as much of those words were directed at him and directed internally at himself and his own team as they were towards Accrington, if that makes sense. And I think I agree with you, Stu, to come away from it seeing that level of anger and frustration at a result like that is quite a good sign from a player who, let's not forget, this is his first taste of this with Ipswich. We've had many players that have, you know, been wheeled out after games who had defeat after defeat in this manner. This is the first one for Morsy. And to see that level of anger and hurt in him is something that he won't want to repeat. So hopefully he's the kind of captain that can spread that anger and disappointment to the rest of his players to make sure that this never happens again. Because this is a new Ipswich team. It feels like they've been hurt by the same sort of Accrington punches that we've all been hurt by in the past. But actually, this is the first experience of this for all of them together. And it'll be really telling from this point how they deal with it. Because clearly in the past, it's something that teams of Ipswich past have never sort of managed to truly deal with. This one needs to if they're going to get anywhere near where they want to go.
I think you're absolutely right, Andy. I mean, it's a bit of feels like a line in the sand, really, in so much as, you know, we've been here before with Town, but this is a completely new squad. Ross, I mean, obviously you spoke to fans afterwards. I mean, you said you had to delete one video, which, like I said, we were deleting videos, so that's not new. But I mean, obviously, but the fans are still, I did watch the game. I mean, there's still a lot of support out there. I mean, they, you know, put up with a lot and still back the team, don't they?
Yeah, I think there was over 800 fans there. You know, the fuel crisis and the weather not, you know, a bit bleak. And, you know, we've been to Accrington before and, you know, we've seen defeat. So I'm sure a lot of people have been put off going to Accrington. But, you know, these sort of games, if we want to get out of League One, we've got to win. I want to give a big shout out to John Watson, a friend of the show. I stayed around his on Friday night in Doncaster, a very good host. His wife, Deb, and his twins baked us cakes and all that. So that was the highlight of the
quickly, Ross, weekend. His twins who were kicked out of their own bedroom to accommodate you. Let's be real about this.
Is this true? Is this true, Ross?
Yeah. To be fair, I didn't, you know, I said I'm happy to be on the, you know, on the couch or anything like that. But John said, yeah, you have one of the twins' beds. Go in there. Enjoy.
The poor children were kicked out of their bedrooms to accommodate you.
Yeah, and my friend Liam as well. Of course, Liam.
You took someone else with you.
Yeah. That's the only highlight of Accrington is very good hospitality from John Watson and co. But yeah, fans were, you know, they're still backing Paul Cook, but they're just frustrated and disappointed. You know, from the highs of the 6-0 win to then going all the way to Accrington and seeing that performance, it's just like, oh, as I said at the start of the show, I hope that kills you. You know, as town fans, you just think we've finally got lift off here with all the signings, the summer like no other, and then go to Accrington and lose. It's just like, oh, here we go again.
It's exaggerated from an Ipswich Town point of view. I think amongst this fan base, amongst us that's followed it for so long, this level of disappointment feels all the more crushing because there is that here we go again element to it. And you hope that the players and management aren't tainted by that as much because they haven't lived through these kind of repeated disappointments. I think Paul Cook's got a sense of, I think he's spoken to enough fans and gets where Ipswich Town's fans are at. But as I keep saying, that this is built up over many years and it's always going to be bubbling under the surface and it doesn't take much to bring it. Maybe if you'd started from a blank slate, the reaction to this might not have felt as strong. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the concern, because we know how the last two seasons, the last three seasons where they've been and played at Accrington end, don't we? And I think that's what you're saying, isn't it? That we know what a season that involves a miserable game at Accrington and loss can bring. But just plucking a player out, George Edmondson couldn't care less that Ipswich Town were knocked out of the FA Cup at Accrington in January 2019 and then lost in the league later that year. So the hope has to be that, like you say, they're not tainted by it. It's not relevant to them as long as they react to this one, possibly like previous teams didn't. So that's got to be the hope.
Just taking this season in isolation, it's about changing trends. And the slight worry for me is that now Ipswich have gone to Burton, Cheltenham and Accrington and had similar trends unfold. And you've got to be able to see those trends changing. And there was, if you then looked at the home games, that the trend was great going forward, but wide open at the back. And it took several games for them to kind of alter that trend. It took the Bolton game for them to really get back to basics on that front. So the only hope is that while the Bolton game proved to be a bit of a, you know, almost a blessing in disguise, okay, right, this has to stop now in terms of being wide open. And they changed a few things and they got stuff right. This game has to be, okay, that sort of away performance cannot happen again. And they've got to find a way now. They've got to find an answer for those sort of games not to happen, because in League One, there'll be some more games like that. There'll be some more away matches that Ipswich find themselves in that scenario again, and they've got to find a solution to it.
Absolutely. Well, look, we're sort of 33 minutes or so into this KOA podcast, my friends. I hope you're enjoying listening to Andy Warren, Stuart Watson, Ross Hawes, and myself all chatting away about Ipswich Town. A little bit depressing sometimes, though, when they lose 2-1 Accrington. We need to cheer ourselves up a little bit. So I'm going to cheer us all up just to say, has anyone seen the new James Bond film yet?
It came out on Friday. We were in Accrington all weekend. Sadly, not. Have you, Mike?
No, I haven't. No, I'm hoping to go this week. I just wondered if I was going to say, if you have seen it, could you not talk about it? But seeing as none of us have seen it, doesn't really matter. And also, while I'm on the, while we're doing a few sort of, church notices, manscaped.com, of course, are our sponsors here on KOA. And so support them if you can. I don't really got too much into manscaped.com, but apparently very popular, very, Mark, I know Mr. Heath loves their products. So that's very good. So go and seek them out while you've got the opportunity. Okay. So,
Mike, who's your favorite Bond? Before we move
now, it's a good. Now you see, with now my favorite Bond. You see, my favorite Bond is Roger Moore, and followed quickly by Daniel Craig. To be fair, but Roger Moore, Man with the Golden Gun, wonderful. One of my probably my favorite Bond. That and Skyfall, my two. What about you, Ross? Do you watch Bond or do you watch Jack Reacher?
No, Bond for me. I'm not a big fan, but you know, Daniel Craig is my era. Roger Moore, I've heard of his name, but I don't know much about those Bonds. I have watched GoldenEye and all that, but yeah, Daniel Craig for me. Who was after him? Who was before him? Sorry,
Pierce Brosnan.
Okay, nah. Daniel Craig.
Stu,
I guess Pierce Brosnan was kind of my era of Bond. Mm. I would say growing up, but Sean Connery. Do like a bit of Sean Connery?
Yeah. Sean's good, isn't he?
But Roger Moore's a classic, isn't he? And Daniel Craig has made things a little bit grittier, hasn't he, in recent years? And I quite like that. So, yeah, I do like a bit of Bond.
I love it. I think Skyfall's wonderful. Skyfall's a brilliant film, I think. Right up there, Andy. I mean, are you a Bond man? Are you a Bond man yourself?
Yeah. I quite like I think you have to like a James Bond film. Like, what's not to like? I would probably say that Daniel Craig's my favourite of them. I'm the same as Stu. Brosnan is my era. But the best thing about James Bond, and you might agree with me with this one, Stu. Did you play GoldenEye on the N64? What a game that was. That's the best thing that's come out of James Bond. Spent hours and hours and hours playing that game. I must say, I've not really dipped into the kind of pre Pierce Brosnan Bonds that much, but I might actually try and find a way of playing GoldenEye on the N64, like an emulator or something, after this, when I finished all of my work, of course, because that was a lot of fun.
We should have a Bond night, really, the KOA team. I think we should have a Bond night. We should all bring popcorn and you know, Coca-Cola and stuff, and all gather around someone's house and do a couple, two or three DVDs one after the other. We can come around your house, Stu, I think.
You're making it sound like sort of a teenage girl's sleepover.
well, we can stay over if you like, but I mean, just a Bond night would be fun. Okay. Well, look, carrying on the rather humorous thing. Well, I hope this is going to be humorous, because I'm not really sure, because you know, the Accrington standing is. I don't know about you, but I'm a bit impressed, really. So I'm hoping, can't wait for the next game to come along so we can win a match. Andy, now, I wasn't in the last podcast. I was obliterated from the money. Bets game that we play. As you know, you gave me I had to spend 5k of my own money to take part when I a few weeks ago. But now, what is the situation with the latest betting odds? Did you win? Did you lose? Are we up? Are we down?
So just to be, you took 5 grand of your own money and just
Yes, because you joined in with the other guys, and you did. I wasn't on, and you sent me that text saying, "Well, if you're not on, you're going to have to take 5k of your own money." Now, you don't say you didn't say that, because you sent me the text, and so I had to put my own money on.
What did you put it on?
I put it on the first corner that went out when Edmondson headed it behind whatever. I said it was going to be an Ipswich corner, and it was actually a Sheffield Wednesday corner. So I lost all my money. So I'm not playing anymore. So you better tell the other boys. What's happened this weekend? Tell our KOA army.
Well, every cloud has a silver lining, doesn't it? It was an excellent weekend for the million pound picks pot. Two bets were put on. One was Ipswich to win either half of the game, which they clearly did. Macaulay Bond put them ahead at half time. That won me £66,000 on top of my original £100,000 stake. And then I also had a little £20,000 on Colby Bishop to score a goal, which he did, of course, and that's £70,000, which means a nice little bonus to top up the account. And all is looking good. So whatever £166,666 plus 70 is what I've added. So I'm back to £916,666, only 85 grand down for the season now.
So you put money on an Accrington player to score?
Yeah.
Great.
And he did.
Yeah, well done. Really good. Well, there you go. Anyway, oh well, that's excellent, Andy. Good news and good. We're all pleased for Colby Bishop and our fake money that we don't really have that he managed to score for Accrington. That's great news. So anyway, well, look, let's get back to the football, shall we? Because talking of football fixtures, there's me just saying how much I desperately need it. We all desperately need Ipswich Town to get back to winning ways, and they have a very quick opportunity, Andy, because obviously tomorrow night is the EFL Trophy, that well-loved, well-supported trophy that we all love and all the managers love, seem to love. And they're at Gillingham. Now, I've just had a quick look at the table. If Town were to win, everyone's on 3 points, I believe, in our super group of Colchester, West Ham, under-21s, Gillingham and Ipswich. So it's boiling up to be an absolute corker. Is it not, Andy? Please tell me you're excited.
Look, I really like this competition. Mike, just a quick production note on this. We call it the Papa John's Trophy on here because we're trying to get some free pizza. We are trying to get some free pizzas. So if we could just call it the Papa John's Trophy from here on out, please. Look, I like this competition. I know it's a bit of a joke, but I like it for those reasons. I like seeing players that we've not seen for some time. I like seeing players get a chance. And this game could be a real chance. Ipswich have just lost to Accrington. Cook's not happy. And I think 11 players are going to get a go in this game, and a few of them will be in like genuine territory of kind of twisting arm territory. These games serve a purpose. Ultimately, clearly, the trophy isn't that big a deal, and going to Gillingham isn't ideal. I think we can all feel like we've been to Gillingham and played against Gillingham enough over the last 3 years. It's too much, but I will always look forward to these games, and I'm not embarrassed to say that.
Roscoe, now you'll be trailing down there as well, no doubt, and I'm taking your camera to take some. You're not going.
Not going. Got other plans.
Ross gets rested in this competition.
Are you really? You're rested for EFL Papa John Trophy games.
Yeah, I want the free pizza, but although we don't get that at games, it's not actually there.
There's not a pizza in sight. I haven't even seen a pizza, and I've been to two games in this group already this season, but no one else can say that. And I haven't seen a single pizza in sight. But to be fair, Ross, if you were to do like a game day fans video at these games, I dread to think what the away how many away fans there are going to be at this game.
Full open air away end as well, isn't it? So if it's a bit wet and windy again on Tuesday night, it's not the greatest ground to be at, Priestfield.
So Stu, Andy's make a good point there about this could be a few people. It's I did read a quote from Steve Evans, the Gillingham boss, ahead of this game, and he said he's going to obviously rotate players. He said rather than not coming in his office complaining, they can go on the pitch and show him what they can do. I mean, but there is a thing about this though. Potentially tomorrow Ipswich Town could put out a strongish team of players who have not been playing 90 minutes, but. Let's take Joe Piggott. Joe Piggott plays against Gillingham, okay? And scores a hat-trick and they win 3-0. Is he really likely to start on Saturday against Shrewsbury? I mean, but this is the
argument. He'd be a difficult one, wouldn't he? Because yeah. I don't think of all the players in that team, Macaulay Bond's the one that you're not displacing anytime soon. Mm. And where else Joe Piggott fits into the 4-2-3-1, I'm not sure. They've maybe playing him sort of just off. Bond might be an option, but it's going to be a strong team because they've got such a big squad now that you can afford to play, make 11 changes and still have a really senior first team 11 out in this competition. I imagine it will be a sort of a 11 changes job, you would imagine, on Tuesday night. And as Andy says, you're probably going into this now. Had Ipswich just won at the weekend and got back-to-back wins, one of which being 6-0, you'd be going into this thinking, it's almost like a bit of a punishment, something you've just got to go through. And no matter how well I play, I'm not going to dislodge anyone. But I think most people will be going into this thinking, if I play well, I've got half a chance of getting in that team for Shrewsbury on Saturday.
Can I chuck a team out? There's 11 players that I've written down. There's going to be some that I think you'll probably want to discuss with me after this. But this is the team that I, if it was me, that I would play. I'd keep Kladke in goal. I'd play Vincent Young, Nsiala, Wolfenden. I'd play Miles Kenlock at left back. Raheem, we'll talk about that. Raheem Harper, Idris Elmazouni. Three of Aluko, Chaplin, Edwards, and then Norwood. That's the team that I've got written down.
Well, obviously, Mr. Kenlock is the big debate there, Andy. I mean, you'd like to see him given a chance. He's not got a chance.
It's a chance in name only. With Coulson injured, and I think out for maybe a little bit longer. Penny's the number one left back. I think they need to get Miles Kenlock off the books, and if it was me, I'd give him a game just to remind people that he exists and that there's a left back here that can play football. And Ross might dispute that last point, that can play football, and just to maybe try and move him on a little bit. I'd hope that his, if he is involved at training, look, I think this is a long shot for him to be involved. I'm not suggesting he will be, but if he's coming in to train and his attitude's decent, despite the situation he's clearly in, miles away from it, never coming back into it under Paul Cook, it's not happening. But give him a game. Give him a game.
He won't play, Andy. It's not happening.
I know.
If we played £1 million picks now, I'd be pushing all of my chips into the middle and saying I'm all in on Miles Kenlock not featuring in this game.
I know.
Bailey Clements and Albie Armin have both had minutes ahead of him this season.
He's
in Siberia.
Just you hang on, Stuga. It's not your £1 million to go throwing in the middle. There's Andy's. He's the one who's got all the money. He can put what he... Don't you start playing with his money and provide £1 million, all that sort of stuff, please. Andy's got the million, haven't you, Andy?
I have, yeah. It's real money as well. look, I know the deal here, but just a little theory from me.
What about, you said Kladke in goal. What about if Christian Walton is over his injury? Is there a reason to get him in the team? And if he came in and played really well, do you think Cook would be itching to sort of get him back in his league team as soon as possible?
This is an interesting one, isn't it? Like, clearly Christian Walton was brought in to be the starting goalkeeper when that happened near the transfer deadline. If he's fit to play, probably, yeah. My gut feeling is that he's maybe not. But I'd play Kladke over Holy, certainly, if it was a situation of making that pick. You've got Kladke back in the team. You've got him playing well. I'd keep him playing. Holy obviously had a nightmare against West Ham. There is the prospect of Walton being back in and amongst it soon. I'd use this game to give Kladke another one to keep that rolling for him, rather than giving it to Holy.
And Roscoe, where do you, you've heard Andy's team there? I mean, Kenlock aside, who you obviously wouldn't start. I mean, what about the rest of Andy's lineup there? Wolfenden back, and
At the end of the day, if we want to progress in this competition, of course we've got to win at Gillingham. As you said earlier, this is other teams have got 3 points already. The under 23s are playing well today, and the team is out right now, and Alcon Baggett and Bailey Clements are playing. So Bailey Clements has been playing left back, Alcon Baggett, of course, the big centre half. So one player there, Albie Armin, he's another youngster who played did he play against West Ham?
Yeah.
So he's a defender, so he could be maybe involved there. So he could possibly play left back. I just can't see Paul Cook playing a strong side. I know we want that momentum. We want to use these squad players. But I don't know. I think Norwood is a good shout, but I just don't know.
There's players I've not mentioned on there. So there's Caden Jackson, Louis Barry, which is ominous. But do you play him? Edwards needs to be up to speed, you'd think, for the weekend, because Selina's not here for the Shrewsbury game. You'd think Edwards needs to be up for speed for that. Chaplin and Aluko need games. How do you fit Louis Barry into there as well? Caden Jackson isn't going to get a look in from the start, I wouldn't have thought. And then Joe Piggott, I think, is only back training today after the virus that he's had. So I wonder whether he might actually not quite be ready for a start in this one and might be the half an hour from the bench option. But
Louis Barry's going back to Aston Villa, isn't he?
It looks that way. I think Salina signing was kind of the end potentially for him. He didn't come here to play in Ipswich's under 23s, did he?
Are you sad about that, Stu? Would you like to see more of Barry?
He was an exciting signing on paper when he came, wasn't he? Obviously very highly thought of at Aston Villa, FA Youth Cup winner, fresh off the back of that. He played and scored for their senior team against Liverpool. But yeah, obviously Ipswich ended up signing players that they hadn't bet their mortgage on to get, notably Salina, which is the one that's kind of changed the picture for him. So that's just how it is. But the fact that he sort of played for the 23s, and if he doesn't even feature in the Papa John's Trophy game, then the writing would be on the wall there, I would imagine. And yeah, that three that Andy said behind the striker, of you want to get Carl Edwards back up to speed, you imagine. Connor Chaplin scores against Sheffield Wednesday, needs game time. Aluko as well. It's hard to see where he's if that's the backup three. It's hard to see where Louis Barry's fitting into all of this at the moment.
It's quite strong. I mean, Andy's team there, Stu, I mean, you know, which is... It's not miles off what potentially it could be. It's quite a strong side.
Yes, Ross just said that. I can't see him playing a strong team. And I know what you mean in terms of playing the same first team 11, but that is a strong team for this competition. Yeah. I mean, Gillingham, you went to the Colchester-Gillingham game earlier in the...
I did. That is how much I love this, Stu.
Good. Yeah. What was the Gillingham? Was all sort of kids and reserve players, was it?
I'd say a similar vibe to the Ipswich one. They left out Verdane Oliver, who is the big striker. Dempsey, their captain, didn't play. Kind of a combative midfielder who I quite like. But it was a senior team missing some notable faces. Also, most notably, missing Steve Evans, who wasn't there. Just sent his assistant to run the game. Now, I can't see him staying at home and missing a game against Ipswich. It's not Paul Lambert, his little touchline friend, but he likes playing against Ipswich. I think he enjoys the pantomime of it. And even if it is a Papa John's Trophy game, he'll want to win. So he will return to the fold.
Yeah, I'm not bothered that much about this competition. To be honest, when Ipswich first dropped down, there was that sort of sense of excitement. Oh, chance to go to Wembley, and Ipswich haven't been to Wembley since 2000. And if you're not going so well in the league, then some cup success kind of goes a little bit of a way to dampening that. And you could make that argument this season, the way the season's started, that some sort of excitement, all of a sudden you get through your group, you win two, three games or whatever it is, and you go into Wembley, and maybe that gets the ball, you know, positive momentum going in the league as well. But I bet if you asked any Sunderland or Portsmouth fan, did getting to the final of the EFL Trophy go any way to sort of taking the edge off the disappointment of still being stuck in the third tier? I imagine the answer would be no, wouldn't it?
Yeah, of course it would. I mean, the league is obviously the main thing, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know if this... I go back to the old days, Stu, of 1980s and all that, of course, when Town were fighting on all fronts. And OK, they didn't win everything, but they still won something. And I think Ipswich, to me, Ipswich Town have got a really decent squad in this League One. There's no reason they can't attack matches with strong squads. They should have attacked the Carabao Cup game against Newport with a strong squad, a strong team. You know, to keep throwing the league at it all the time and just saying, well, I mean, Ipswich are sixth bottom. You know, to go to win at Gillingham tomorrow night with a strong side will do no harm whatsoever, I would suggest. But we'll have to wait and see. Well, we're coming. We're not too far short from the end of the pod. I hope you enjoyed it, Stu and Andy and Ross. I hope you're enjoying being here with myself and talking Ipswich Town. Obviously, the KOA army. I've noticed some photographs on Twitter over the weekend. Some sort of selfies with yourselves, the three of you, all sort of posing like sort of celeb. Hollywood A-listers, whatever you were, you know, with fans signing autographs. I mean, what's going on? I mean, what's all this about? I don't see any players. I don't see Ipswich Town players on Twitter. I see you three. What's happening? Lovely.
They're our friends. They're our friends.
Well, it's lovely to see. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not. It's just nice to see. I mean, are you up for this all the time? This sort of this selfie style type, you know.
Stuart Watson's got a little bum bag like Neil Warnock, right? with pre-signed pictures of himself in it.
And he hands
that was very nice to meet John Watson. We've interacted with John a lot on social media, and he's been a big part of all Ross's videos over a long period of time, as have others. So when we get to bump into some of these guys in person, it's really nice. And we get to find out about him hosting Ross and Liam from Crew staying over at John's house. That for me is, you know, it's just nice that there's that sort of, it's so strange that you can jump in a car, drive for 5 hours, pull up, drive down a side road of a sort of a housing estate, walk 50 yards around the corner and bump into people that you know. And it's people that you only kind of know via the world of social media at times, and these little communities that we build via the various podcasts that cover Ipswich Town. And that's the lovely thing about supporting football, isn't it? You take away the results and the disappointment and everything else. It's that sort of shared feeling of being part of something, part of a collective. And for us to kind of feel part of that's really nice as well.
Yeah. Even by that kind of, by the end of it, you feel like you're questioning why you do. I'm sure many fans were questioning why they went to Accrington, but I saw loads of people talking about how they'd met up with people, particularly now when kind of been away from, fans have been away from games for so long. And this is only like a handful of away days into the new season, like meeting up with people who they've not seen for ages. It was nice to meet Mike, another star of Game Day. Ross, excellent photographer. Saw Colin, who's a family member of mine who bump into at away games all over the place. And it's nice, isn't it? I think Accrington brings out the best in all of that because it's so open and so just it's a nice place to kind of meet people and interact. And then the football comes.
I was looking at that stand that's getting built every time we go to Accrington, a little bit more is being built and improved. And you kind of think, how much of this is Ipswich Town paid for with Caden Jackson, Janoi Dinassian, and now Cameron Burgess as well? That's probably a hefty, Ipswich have probably provided a hefty old chunk of their income over the last 2 or 3 years and are probably helping them become that established League One club that they are. So,
Harry Pell looked a bit of a player, did he?
Harry Pell was named their man of the match. He scored, he got the assist. I was telling Andy before the game, I've got a bit of history with Harry Pell. Do you remember years ago, Mike? I think it was 2009, I looked it up. I played in a charity game and I scored the equaliser at Needham Market.
Needham Market,
Harry Pell, it was a bit of a sort of a, it was a sort of a local side sort of made up of local level players and I was involved and a few others. And it was the opposition was sort of Hollyoaks and Emmerdale actors and people like that. And Phil Daniels of sort of acting and music fame, he of Parklife fame, scored for the opposition. I scored a last minute equaliser, but I spent the game kicking chunks out of a young 16, 17 year old lad, quite a big lad. And I got chatting to him in the bar afterwards and said, "Oh, who are you?" And he said, "Oh, I'm at Charlton. I'm on their academy books." And I looked him up afterwards. He told me his name and it's Harry Pell. So I've always kind of kept tracks on him since. And he obviously went to Colchester and he's gone up there. So it was him who hoofed the ball out of the ground and angered Mr. Morsey. It was quite an inventive little sort of back hill in a crowded area that set up the equaliser. And then he lashed home the winner as well. So,
but he was far too polite to run past the press box giving you the V's, Stu. for all the kicking you did to him that afternoon.
He won't have any recollection of that, I'm sure. But
he's a big boy, isn't he?
He is. We talked about sort of, I remember when they missed out on Matt Crooks in the summer, and I sort of said to Andy, there's not many Matt Crooks about of his type. You don't get those sort of big, solid, physical number 10 types. They're pretty rare. But Harry Pell was a kind of a version of that. He sort of played that same sort of Matt Crooks role, really, that's caused Ipswich problems in the past. So dealing with those sort of big number 10s is something Ipswich need to work out how to do.
Oh, that's not Harry Pell.
Look at that. That's me with
that hair. Stuart Watson. Gosh, Stuart.
And he's just flashed up a picture here from that game. And that man sort of swatting me aside from afar is Cyril Regis's brother.
Wow.
I don't know, in for the Showbiz 11.
Look, well, isn't that
hair?
You have got a full head of hair there, my friend. Yeah, that's before you started following him. Cyril Regis's brother, look. Hang on a second. Look what I've got here.
Whoa.
There you go. Spooky.
Cyril Regis, my story. That's a book up on my shelf there. Cyril, great book. That is great. Cyril Regis was a terrific centre forward, my boys. I don't know if you saw him play, but you wouldn't have seen him play, I'm sure. Fantastic striker, Cyril Regis, West Brom.
What are your other books? Is that Novak Djokovic? Is that Novak Djokovic?
Mr. Nasty, Ilie Nastasi.
Ilie Nastasi. And who's at the top?
That's Nastasi. I've got Mike Atherton at the bottom.
Okay. Mike, that's who I thought was Djokovic. Mike Atherton and Novak Djokovic.
I once interviewed Mike Atherton when I was a trainee journalist over down at Hastings Way. He had a big function. I was allowed to interview him. He was quite exciting. Right. Well, look, guys, we're coming.
Dave Regis, his name is. I've just looked him up. He played played for Southend during the 90s and a string of other clubs in a sort of a solid football league.
Stewie has mixed and played with some of the best. He doesn't just write about the game, he's experienced it at those sort of levels.
My job that day was to win it and give it to Kevin Horlock in midfield.
Well, look, guys, we've come to the end of our Kings of Anglia. Obviously, I've stood in for Heathy here, who we hope will have recovered from the awful experiences of the highs and the lows of Ipswich Town. He's hoping to, I know he's hoping to get out of bed this evening and just take a walk round Heath Towers, which is about 4 acres. So he should have a nice long walk. At this point, he usually says any other business, which I don't really know ever what that means because none of us really ever have any. Ross! So I'm going to come to you first. Papa John's trophy, you're not going to tomorrow. So have you got anything lined up for tomorrow, or are you just on day off? What are you doing?
It's my niece's birthday.
Ah, and her name is?
Alana. So I'll say big up, Alana.
Happy birthday, Alana, for everybody. Yeah. And so that's what you're doing tomorrow. You're eating birthday cake most of the day?
Birthday cake. Of course, you'll be at school for most of the day, but in the evening there's a little party going on. So I'm going to enjoy that instead of going to Gillingham. So yeah,
carry on.
I want to say a big shout out to, of course, Harvey Davis and his dad Terry, who are at Accrington as well. Always good to see them. Of course, Harvey Davis is the sweet Welsh prince, friend of the show. And I don't know if you were going to line this up already, but we've got to mention Ben Diaf, who of course ran in the London Marathon and did an absolute great time, 3 hours and 33 minutes with his brother Dan. That is good timing. Just fantastic from him.
Great stuff, Ben. 3 hours, 33 minutes. I mean, of course, wow. I can't even think of how on earth we could run for 3 hours and 33 minutes, Stu. Eh? I could hardly walk for that length of time, let alone run it. But any other business, Stu, for yourself? Are you looking forward to the big game tomorrow?
Yes.
Just embrace it. Go with it. It is what it is. Enjoy it.
Andy loves
it.
Andy loves it. I mean, he's this is the happiest I've seen him ahead of a game, to be honest.
I do. I really enjoy it. It is what it is. It's not the top priority. It's not great, but I just love it anyway. It is what it is. I'm going to enjoy watching Toto Nsiala play, who I'm sure will play again. Another chance to see Idris play. I like it.
Toto's hair's gone, by the way, we noticed. He was growing out a bit of an afro, wasn't he, before? Well, that's gone. We're back to bald Toto.
Mm. Oh, well, there you go. So we finish on. Well, look, people, Kings of Anglia Army, I hope you've enjoyed me standing in for the Heath Monster for a little while. He'll be back at the end of the week, like I said, all being well. And so, look, thanks. As we said about manscaped.com, support them and back them and for them supporting us. And, get your little bits and bobs trimmed, apparently. That's what it's useful. So I'm Mike Bacon. I hope you've enjoyed listening to me and the rest of the guys here, Andy Warren, Stuart Watson and Ross Halls. We'll be back at the end of the week. And like you say, hopefully to talk about a Town victory at Gillingham and look ahead to the match against big game against might be international weekend coming up, but Town are still playing, which was the first time for a little while on international weekend, which is great. They're home to Shrewsbury. Talk about that later in the week, and we will we'll speak to you again sometime.
Cheers, Poncho.
From true crime to football, Brexit to Pokeville. For more great podcasts from Archon, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archon.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.